You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello and welcome into the 24/7 Sports Football Recruiting Podcast. I'm National Recruiting Analyst Cooper Pateko alongside 24/7 Sports Director of Scouting Andrew Ivins. We got a great show for you today. Drew's been on the road three straight weeks, OT7 Orlando recap, a lot going on. You might have heard of this name, the alpha dog out of that event, Madden Iamaleava, the brother of Nico Iamaleava. So we'll talk a little bit about him. We'll talk about Memphis, their deal with FedEx and the NIL era. We'll also talk a little bit about By Job, some breaking news, the former top 247 pass rusher by way of Michigan State. He's in the portal now, going to play his ball at Kansas. And then a slight change to the spring evaluation period. We'll talk about that later in the show. But Drew, I'm still in New Orleans, a week longer than I thought. I got the nice rustic background in the back down here, downtown New Orleans. I can't complain. How are you doing, my friend?
Doing good, man. I'm recovering from being in the sun for, I don't know, like 12 straight hours over the weekend. I have some color to me. I do not have a cool backdrop like yourself, that exposed brick. I'm a fan.
We got to get that back home in Nashville. Maybe we can get in the office. But guys, if you are in here watching the show, we appreciate you. As always, remember, every Tuesday, Wednesday, you can find us, the Oyster Boys, noon Eastern time. Make sure to like and subscribe. Also, if you're in the chat, you got a question, make sure to put that in now. We'll get to viewer questions at the end of the show. But Drew, let's talk about OT7, and let's talk about that name, Madden Iamaleava, the brother of Nico, the former five-star. This is a guy that I think you and I and the rest of the scouting team, we've been trying to figure out. There's been a lack of information, but not a lack of in-person context, if that really kind of makes sense, whether it's been the age, whether it's just trying to get a feel for what's going on with the recruitment, Nebraska, UCLA, you got Alabama sniffing around. It just kind of seems odd for somebody that has as much of a palpable name that he has that you haven't heard more about him. But he had a good weekend in Orlando. Tell us what you saw from him.
Yeah, my alpha dog for the weekend. It was really the weekend of the Madden. So you had Madden Iamaleava, who led his team to the final of that tournament. And then Madden Williams, a receiver in the 2026 class. He was part of the team that won the championship. He had like 12 touchdowns over the course of the weekend. But really, Madden, you know, the quarterbacks are where my eyes are always going to go in this type of setting, especially kids from around the country. And last weekend it was Bryce Underwood that was there. You had Deuce Knight, Tavian St. Clair. This weekend it was Madden Iamaleava, Antoine Hill, and Hassan Longstreet. I thought Madden had the best weekend of the bunch. He's a guy that I haven't been able to really just put my thumb on, right? You know, 1 year starter. Obviously, he backed up his brother there at Warren High School in Downey, California. He went 11-2 this past season, 58% completion percentage. But he's kind of been like a Yeti. You know, I can't figure him out. And after just getting a chance to watch him both Saturday and Sunday, I mean, the similarities between him and Nico are there. When you look at the arm, it's very upper body. They can zip it to all three levels, challenge tight windows, you know, drop the arm down. I thought he was awesome. And really, as we head into the June, you know, a lot of these quarterback dominoes have fallen, but like Madden to me is a name everyone needs to know. Like, where is his recruitment going to go? You know, tried to talk to him about that in between games, and he was kind of, you know, standoffish in terms of schools that were involved. You know, I brought up Nebraska, I brought up UCLA, and he said really one of the only places he visited this spring was Alabama. Kalen DeBoer was there for a spring practice, which to me got, you know, the mind churning a little bit. Okay, I think this is a guy that as more of these quarterbacks make decisions, I can see someone pivoting to him, because there's no question. I mean, he's got the arm talent to play in an up-tempo attack, and he's like Nico, not as tall, you know, not as long, but he can he can certainly, I think, win games on Saturdays.
Going to be really interesting senior season to evaluate with him and kind of see what that looks like. I think Alabama right now, of all the schools to really kind of keep an eye on, where you just don't have a pulse, they've been involved with Deuce Knight, they've been involved with Keelan Russell. You don't really know who their primary target is in that quarterback room. So it's going to be really interesting to kind of follow that and what happens with Madden. He's kind of just sitting out there right now. UCLA still looking for a guy. They landed the transfer from Washington over the weekend. Demetrius Davis, blanking on the name, as Damon Williams, the other young freshman surging over there.
Real quick, I mean, yeah, Alabama, I think, you know, what happens with them? We know Jalen Milroe is going to be the guy this upcoming season. Austin Mack follows DeBoer and that staff over from Washington. I think he, you know, you kind of pencil him in as the quarterback in 2025 and beyond, but you also got Ty Simpson there. But, like, what is the Crimson Tide's plan long-term at quarterback? I think that's a fair question. Remember, Julian Sayin leaves for Ohio State, and DeBoer and his staff have been working behind the eight ball with this crop of 2025 quarterbacks. And it didn't help that Noah Grubbs, you know, was hired at Alabama, leaves to go to the NFL. I think it's kind of a fascinating storyline to follow. Coop, I said we were going to have storylines of the cycle, right? I can't remember the other ones off the top of my head. I think Keelan Russell was certainly one of them. You know, what happens with him? Does he stick with SMU? But what does Alabama do at quarterback? Because they have, you know, kicked the tires on a number of these guys. You said Deuce Knight. How about Bryce Baker, the North Carolina commit? Like, KJ Lacy's been there as well. I mean, they have been involved with pretty much everyone that's uncommitted. Even got Matt Zollers in for a late visit.
Yeah, my biggest advice would be, not that I need to be giving advice on this topic, would be pick a lane and choose one, right? I mean, you just had a top 10 quarterback go in the NFL draft and Michael Penix Jr., Kalen DeBoer. You see what he's been able to do with that position. Obviously, a really fun and dynamic offense to play in. There's no shortage of selling points there in Tuscaloosa. So you would think right now, I think what they need to do is they need to re-huddle and they need to pick a lane. And what I mean by that, is it Keelan Russell? Is it Deuce Knight? Is it Bryce Baker? Or is it one of these guys like a Madden, Imai Leiva? The problem is, it looks like they've been, you know, a mile wide and about an inch deep. I think they really kind of need to rechange their focus, and we'll see what happens there. It is Alabama. It is Kalen DeBoer. So at the end of the day, I'm not questioning the fact that they're going to get a talented arm, but are they going to get their quarterback in the future? I think that's more the bigger question.
Coop, you know what I would do if I was in their shoes? I would look for a late bloomer. And then I'd go all in on our number one ranked quarterback in 2026, Faison Brandon. That's the direction I would go. You know, not cut your losses here in the 25 cycle. There's going to be coaching changes. I mean, every time, right, it seems like quarterbacks pick their chair in the summer months, and then we have a reshuffling right before the early signing period, which could be moved up this year. It's going to be earlier. So, you know, maybe try to find the late bloomer out there.
Speaking of quarterbacks, let's take a look at other notable standouts from OT7 in Orlando. On the top of the list, how about Texas A&M commit Hussan Longstreet from California? We'll talk about him in a minute. Syracuse also with a couple of standouts in Demetrius Samuel and Julian McFadden. Talon Taylor, we'll talk about him. And then Alabama with a couple of commits making some hay. Zamir Smith, Abdul Sanders from Modern Day in California. But Drew, let's start at the top. Hussan Longstreet, a guy that we're certainly excited about, ranks number 28. He's the number 5 quarterback in the country in 2025. We have yet to mint 32 5-stars. This is a guy that's in that neighborhood. What did you like from him and what you kind of categorize as a up and down performance?
So I've stole this term from Daniel Jeremiah at the NFL Network, who does obviously an excellent job. I can't remember what quarterback he was talking about when he said that that quarterback was a driving range quarterback. I would put Hussan Longstreet in the same bucket. As soon as he started warming up with his team, it was like, whoa, you know, just got to watch every route on air. This guy can make all the throws. Love the arm. Bud Elliott from the Cover 3 podcast was out there with me, and he kept saying, wow, like Hussan can generate RPMs. Like, he has a strong arm, and we've touched on this here in this space multiple times. Like, he might have the livest arm of this class. You know, up and down tournament for him, playing with a new team, didn't really get a ton of help from his wide receivers when that field kind of shrunk, you know, when they were down like by the 10-yard line. I think he struggled with the ball placement a little bit, but I thought it was a solid showing. This is what we think Hassan is. I mean, the arm talent is there, and I've said it in the past, and anyone that sees Hassan in person, he is so like twitched up as an athlete. Like there are veins all over his body, and he can beat you with his legs. We've seen that on tape at Corona Centennial, you know, at 5 touchdown runs out in a game in Hawaii late last season to, you know, seal or preserve a win for his team. I like everything about him. He was decked out in Texas A&M gear. He had the Texas A&M backpack. So, you know, what I thought he would be, can't wait to get him at the Elite 11 finals when we put him hopefully next to Tavian St. Clair and Bryce Underwood and some of these other quarterbacks in June.
Heard some good things just about the competitive temperament of the kid. Did you see any of that in person? Oh, did you feel like you saw like this really dialed, focused individual?
Well, I said when the field shrunk, right, he was throwing up some jump balls to Chris Henry Jr., our number two ranked player in the class of 2026. Henry couldn't come down with him. His team ended up losing early Sunday in elimination play. And, you know, you could see some steam coming from the ears. Like, he certainly was upset about the early exit. I don't know if he could change his flight to fly back across the country, but he was kind of fuming over on the sidelines for a little bit, which I don't know. I think you want to see that, right? Like, you want to see a guy at least care. And I know it's club 7-on-7 and it doesn't matter, but sometimes you get these quarterbacks in these settings and they're just throwing it around, you know, not having fun in any way. And, you know, Coop, I don't know if you've heard this from quarterback trainers. You know, the biggest thing, these kids, I mean, you can only throw so many passes a day. Every pass in essence should probably count in some way, you know, like there should be some type of plan, a goal, an objective with that throw. And Hassan to me seems like a kid, you know, where he's not just out there to have fun. You know, he's trying to get better.
He is, you know, at least from what I've heard out of College Station, a guy that they're really excited about, not just the physical toolkit, but the way that he's wired as well. And I think you and I have kind of talked about this already, a little bit of a sidebar. A&M under Elko has been a very focused and intentional department just in terms of how they recruit in their recruiting philosophy. I think everything they've done, they've made sense. The other thing about them, they're on schedule, right? Nothing about them seems like, all right, they got to make a push. They're a little bit behind. Everything that they've done in terms of adding depth, I like what they've done, the offense, defensive line as well. They take players that really kind of fit them in Mike Elko. So A&M, one of those teams to watch. They got a guy in Hassan Longstreet. Another name, Drew, that has emerged for us, especially on our discussion board, Talon Taylor out of Illinois, the number 35 receiver in the country. He's got a 4-star. Next to his name, he's got Juno V's set to Georgia, Notre Dame, and Ohio State. Ole Miss also involved here as well. Drew, turning on the tape of this guy yesterday, he's fun. And the way that I would describe him as a route runner is sticky. I think he's got some of the best one-cut change of direction ability of any player at the skill position in the country. His ability to get in and out of routes and breaks extremely quickly and create separation not only off the line of scrimmage but at the top of the route, I thought it was pretty second to none. He operates primarily out of the slot, but this is a guy, there's a lot of redeeming traits with him. And if you're looking at him just as a pure route runner, this is a dude that you can have a lot of fun with, right?
I'm buying as much Talon Taylor stock as I can right now. Didn't really know much kind of coming into the tournament about him, you know, had him circled. All right, want to see this guy. He too had, I think, double digit touchdowns. And I'm glad you brought up the route running. Like, he makes dynamic full speed cuts and just creates separation. Projectable frame. Yeah, I think he's a shade under 6'1", but he is a tall 6'1", and he's got a huge long arms, like tree-like arms, and this big catch radius, attacks the football. I'm a fan. And you dig back into the senior season there at Geneva High School up in Illinois, you know, missed some time due to injury. So really not a ton of on-field production. I think right around 500 yards, 30 catches, 6 touchdowns. He was dinged up. But Alan True for 24/7 Sports, you know, we saw him at the Under Armour camp up in Ohio earlier this month, or I should say last month. I saw him here at OT7. I thought he was, like you said, one of the best route runners. He's just a playmaker, right? Guy you want to get the football. And I also love the way he is wired. Just talking with him, competitive kid. Dad played in the NFL, co-Big Ten player of the year, running back at Iowa back in, 1997 or 2000? It's 1997. Mom played softball professionally as a collegiate softball coach. I'm all in on this kid. I think he's someone we're going to be talking a lot about here in the coming months. Like you said, Notre Dame visit, Georgia visit. I've heard, keep an eye on Georgia. I know the Dogs really, really like him. Ohio State, we know about Brian Hartline, how he recruits that wide receiver position. And then how about Ole Miss, right? Lane Kiffin, man. I mean, we raved about Jerome Miles, the top 247 wide receiver they picked up last week out of Utah. Now they're up in Illinois. This seems to be a new look for Lane Kiffin and the Rebels.
Yeah, more of a national brand approach. Maybe Ole Miss sticks out to you for good reason. The biggest school that sticks out for me is Notre Dame, right? I went back, and I know you and I were talking yesterday. We're combing through the top 32 right now. I'm watching Derek Meadows, who Notre Dame's in really good position with. But if they can get those type of athletes in that room, that's what they need. I think that's where they really need to upgrade theirs from a talent composition standpoint in that room. Talon Taylor is a different type of athlete, right? We talked about the route running ability, the ability to separate. We love how that quarterback room is setting up. Talk about CJ Carr, Kenny Minchie. Now you got Deuce Knight coming in 2025. All that sets up after Riley Leonard. Who are they getting the ball to? And I like the way Notre Dame's built, but if they can get that receiver position right, it changes the complexity of that team.
Okay, well, I think Ole Miss is the one where it's like, all right, eyebrow raiser that they're involved with this kid. I think that, you know, a year ago.
More geographically than
right,
anything.
Right.
For sure.
How about program fit Georgia? As a wide receiver, I think he could be built to play on the outside in a pro-style attack that wants to pound the football, right, play action, timing-based routes. I think Taylor in Georgia's offense would excite me. And I'm struggling to find a receiver. You know, Nitro Tuggle, they signed last year. He was from Indiana. I don't know. I think there's more juice there when it comes to Taylor.
Is there a player comp that came to mind when watching him?
No player comp yet. I haven't gone that far into the weeds just yet. You got one?
In terms of the quickness and the route running, I got maybe three. Alave kind of comes to mind. He's not as silky, but that stickiness I talked about comes to mind a little bit. Roman Wilson's another name that kind of comes to mind.
I can see the Roman Wilson for sure.
And then reminds me a little bit of Kenny Stills too. Came out of Oklahoma, was drafted by the Saints years and years back. So three guys just in terms of separation quickness that I thought were pretty elite. So now you get a pretty good idea of what Talon Taylor's about. Drew, we talked about Alabama. We talked about quarterback situation. They also had a couple defensive commits there. Zamir Smith listed as an athlete. We'll see what position he plays. But Abdul Sanders from Modern Day, interesting. Number 37 linebacker, Kane Womack, comes over from South Alabama. He's now the DC there in Tuscaloosa. The two backers that they've taken, the other one from Mill Creek, I'm blanking on the name.
Luke Metz and then Daryl Johnson. Metz,
Daryl Johnson, and then you have Abdul Sanders. You throw this kid on tape, it's like everything that you expect to see from a modern-day standout. Super high floor, highly intelligent, key in diagnose ability, very instinctive, been coached up. I think there's some limiting factors maybe when projecting to Sundays. He's only got a 6'1" wing. I don't know how much more he's going to grow. But in terms of providing depth and immediate body that should be able to bang in the SEC, like I like this kid. But it does go to show between Metz and Sanders, these are good players, but I wanted to use these two guys to kind of highlight the way that Alabama had been recruiting an elite level this is a good level. There is a difference. And I'm pointing this out because people keep bringing up, like, I'm at a wedding this week and I'm talking to an Alabama fan. He's like, oh, I don't want to hear about it. You know, DeBoer, we're off to a hot start. And it's like, it's the sustainability and it's the incremental difference between the two, ultimately at the end of the day, that will show up over time, in my opinion. And I'm not saying that's happening now, but when I throw on a kid like that, or when I throw on a kid like Metz, it's that, that's the difference, right? But that is a difference when you get to football in January, is my point.
So Abdullah was here for the second straight weekend. He was also last weekend at Orlando OT7. I don't know if he stayed out here. I don't know if he flew back and forth. It's crazy to think about for a high school athlete playing 7-on-7. But last weekend, I was just kind of pointing to some people in the media and going, all right, like, this is the new look Alabama. This is what Alabama, like, Alabama was not taking bodies like this. And you said it, he's 6'1". He is 230 pounds. They just haven't been in the ballpark for those dudes. You put them in the same lineup as, let's say, Georgia's linebacker class from last year. Remember when Chris Cole showed up at the Under Armour All-America game? Justin Williams, you're like, whoa, like, who are these dudes? You're not going to get that with Abdullah. That being said, I thought he had a really good weekend. You know, for a guy that is 225 pounds, I think he's more of a two-down linebacker at the next level. He could play in coverage, man. You know, there were some bursts there. Also played some offense. Had a catch and run touchdown where he outran a bunch of people. I think for he's a high floor prospect. I get the take for the Crimson Tide, but I think you're right, Cooper, and I'm glad you brought that up. It's just not the same type of athlete, or maybe the same type of guy with measurables that Nick Saban was getting and churning those guys out and getting them into the NFL. But I get the take. I like him. I just think he isn't what Alabama has been bringing in the past.
The other part of this, in year one, I get it. You know, we kind of criticized Brian Kelly, right, when he came over from Notre Dame. It was a very national approach. And obviously you got Kalen DeBoer, pre-existing relationships, Courtney Morgan coming over from Washington. A lot of guys that they recruited on the West Coast. And Abdul Sanders, like, we'll go back and, you know, let's talk about this. You said it, like, physically he fits an SEC-style program, right? He is a big 3-4 inside linebacker that can bang between the tackles. But if you're Georgia, who's, and I'm just using this as an example, never had any issue recruiting the linebacker position, and you can apply this to all positions. If Alabama wants to go to California to go get a guy like Sanders, if I'm Georgia, be my guest. That, you know, that's the best thing that can happen, because now you're sitting there in a really good spot when you're recruiting front seven defenders. Who do you have to go through, right? That used to be those head to head. So that's something that I'm going to keep an eye on. Like, where do you get your beef from? What does that look like? Not to say that Georgia isn't going to have to battle schools like Auburn, Florida, Clemson, so on and so forth. But, you know, if Alabama maybe gets a tendency to go outside of that Southeast footprint and they want to go to the Northeast or they want to go to the West, we've seen that with the receiver, right? We've seen it with a linebacker. To me, that's something to keep an eye on, because I think some of those schools are going to say, all right, well, if you guys are going to do that, then we'll have our fun in our own backyard of the Southeast, which is obviously very populated with talent. So something in my mind to keep an eye out there for. Drew, the Zamira Smith kid, they took pretty early on, right, from Maryland, number 15 athlete in the country, highly rated 3-star, 89 overall. Two-way snaps, I believe. What were your thoughts on him? Because you turn on the tape, it pops. I mean, he's a pretty exciting prospect.
Yeah, pops on offense, right? And Zamir played exclusively kind of slot corner. Now, I'll admit, I did not realize he was at the tournament until I think it was day two, and I was talking to one of his coaches, and they're like, oh, yeah, we got this guy as well. I'm like, oh, you know, that would have been nice if you pointed that out. You guys give us rosters, no numbers. He has some length to him, Cooper. I thought, you know, his ability to mirror, competitive with the hands, you know, not afraid to hand check, quick feet. And the biggest thing is he is lean, right? He is lean. He's a guy that's going to undergo a major physical transformation. And, you know, some people always wonder, all right, you guys put all this stock into this, these 7-on-7 events, you know, you go there every weekend. It's like Zymir Smith is a kid we might have never seen in person had it not been for him traveling down with Torrey Smith's team to participate in this tournament. So good to get some eyeballs on him. You know, I think the theme with Alabama's class as well, and I know Abdul Sanders doesn't do it at Matter Day, which is a really big program. All those guys, like most of these guys that are committed, two-way players, you know, guys that two-way players, three phasers. I think that is a theme of their class. Daryl Johnson, another one guy that goes both ways. You know, that's something that has stood out to me when you kind of dig into that group.
All right, talk to me about Frame Brown. He had a couple commits there this weekend. Frame Brown, Syracuse, what are they ranked right now? Do we have that? I might even dig in on that. I should have looked that up before the show.
I know they got the number 3 class in 2026.
They're staying busy on the recruiting trail, that's for sure. And Julian McFadden was there in Orlando, number 112 receiver. He's a fun one. And another guy from a trait standpoint, should be no shock or surprise if you've been following Fran Brown throughout his career. He has made that an absolute priority for the Orange. And then you got Demetrius Samuel, top 110 player in 2026, number 10 safety. Drew, let's start with Samuel, the younger of the two. He's fun to watch when you turn on the tape. How did he look this weekend?
Another kid, second straight weekend he was there. You know, I think he might be more safety than he is corner. He came up to me and brought that up, how he thinks he's a corner. And guess what? He hung at corner. It was a loaded group of receivers. He played on the outside. You know, another guy that knows what he's doing. A lot of these South Florida, Central Florida DBs, I mean, they've been playing press man since they were 7 and 8 years old. Samuel is one of those kids, knows how to use the sideline. I thought also what stood out about him was his instincts, kind of came off of coverage, almost had a pretty nasty interception when he bailed on his guy to go get the football when it was down in the red zone. We couldn't get his feet in. My takeaway with him is like, all right, you know, Fran Brown has him committed now. He's going to have to fight to keep him in the boat. And really, we've talked about it a little bit in the past, Syracuse and what Brown, who was the 24/7 Sports Recruiter of the Year in the 2024 cycle, for what he did at Georgia. Like, I don't think it's all smoke and mirrors, having seen some of these guys. Like, these are talented football players, and I don't think ever in my career here at 24/7 Sports have I ever left a event and being like, wow, all right, Syracuse has got like two good guys committed. Normally it's a different group of schools like Alabama that we're talking about. But no, Syracuse was certainly something at the top of my mind.
I mean, they got Elijah Robinson up there as well. I mean, the interim head coach at Texas A&M when Jimbo Fisher was out of there, he was certainly a guy that a lot of SEC teams were looking at in a defensive line coaching capacity. They get him up there as a DC. I mean, they got some juice. They know what it looks like. Syracuse, one of those teams, if you're not paying attention, I think 2 to 3 years from now, Drew, and not just their high school efforts, but what they've done in the transfer portal as well, they're going to be a really, really interesting team to watch. To me, like, and it's easy to say this as a former personnel guy, that's the way you should build Syracuse in my mind. It's like this Matt Rhule type of feel. Like, hey, we're going to bet on the traits. We're going to have to be a developmental program, but we're going to have to take some shots, and that's exactly what Syracuse has done. So, Drew, with the recap of OT7 Orlando, Drew, any final thoughts from your time there this weekend?
Only one more OT7 event. I'm glad. 7-on-7 season is coming to a close.
When is it?
Early June, national championship, baby, in Tampa, Florida. You going to come down?
Probably not.
We got some Wawas in Tampa. So,
I'll leave it to you on that. Drew's been grinding on the road, as I mentioned, and we're grinding this week, try to bring you the best recruiting coverage there is in all of college football. So guys, please make sure to like and subscribe. And if you have any questions, like I said, whether it's on X or whether it's on YouTube, make sure to get those in now. We'll get to those at the end of the show. Every Tuesday and Wednesday, you can find the Oyster Boys right here on the 24/7 Sports YouTube channel. at noon Eastern.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Drew, you brought this up. Memphis is getting in the NIL game, right? We've always talked about like group of five. What does it look like? Some of these programs have to get pretty creative. And now you got FedEx stepping up. In Memphis, Tennessee, and they have pledged $25 million to Memphis's NIL initiative over the next 5 years. So that is $5 million per year. You brought it up because, you know, there have been some pretty interesting names linked to Memphis, whether it was in the portal, like Cormani McClain, the former five-star. You got Antoine Hill, the quarterback, who seems to be down to Memphis and Florida, right? Those seems to be the two schools that keep coming up. Peyton Joseph, another top 247 target as well. So Memphis, one of those programs, they got money coming in, not only from the NIL side of this with FedEx, but stadium renovations as well. So now you kind of see, I don't know, Drew, the teams right now that in the group of five, you can kind of highlight, like it seems to be like this push, like USF, Tulane, Memphis. One of these guys is going to have a seat at the table every single year. I think it's really smart to try to get ahead of this as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I just brought up how Syracuse, I left OT7 with Syracuse on my mind. I also left it with Memphis on my mind because Antoine Hill was there. His team got bounced early, kind of up and down tournament for him. He's a top 247 quarterback for us, former Colorado commit. I mean, a 6'5" pocket passer. Great deep ball, intermediate stuff needs to improve a little bit. Talking with him, and there's a little media scrum around him, just listening to his update his recruitment. He brought up, I'm going to take an official visit to Florida. I'm going to take an official visit to Memphis. And I'm like, okay, timeout. Let's dig into this Memphis thing. And he said, you know, my agency has been talking with their people. And all right, you know, you pull up Memphis, NIL. It's like, bam, okay, FedEx is giving that program $25 million over 5 years. Now, I think a lot of it is going to go to basketball and Penny Hardaway and what they're doing with basketball. But it seems like Memphis is a potential kind of little giant here in the NIL space. You said it, Cormani McClain. They've got some other guys out of the transfer portal. I just think there's someone we need to be talking about with Group of Five because the funds are there. And let's not forget, Memphis, 10-3 last season, beat Iowa State in a bowl game. They get the quarterback back, who they had to pay for. They get their leading receiver back, who they had to pay for. They take on Florida State in week three. You know, if you want an early favorite for the American Conference, give me Memphis right now. I just think it's fascinating, right? What is this new look college football with all the movement, players getting paid and whatnot? If you have someone that wants to come in and give you the money, it's going to get you access to these high-profile recruits like Antoine Hill, like Peyton Joseph.
Let's use Antoine Hill really kind of as a little bit of an example in an experiment here. And you have Florida sitting at the top of this recruitment. You got Memphis, right? One of these guys, traditionally a powerhouse in the SEC, and another one working their way up through the group of five ranks. And then you have this developmental quarterback prospect who we don't know, right? Like, let's between me and you seeing, I think we've seen Antoine Hill, what, three or four times this offseason?
Maybe five.
Yeah, maybe even more. And every time you see him, it's a little bit of peaks and valleys in terms of what we've seen from him. When it's good, it's good. And when he's off, you feel like, all right, this guy might be 2 to 3 years away from finally putting it together. Drew, the question I would ask you, if you're sitting in Antoine Hill's corner, and let's say everything else is equal, but it really kind of comes down to the development of the player, which one makes more sense for Antoine Hill? Do you take the route to go to Memphis, where more than likely you're going to be able to get experience earlier, or do you go to Florida and are able to sit in a healthy quarterback room behind a guy presumably like DJ Lagway for 2 to 3 years?
I don't know, because here's the other thing. You go to Memphis, you play early, you can always transfer up. You know, I think that's – and Quincy Avery, who's one of the Elite 11 coaches, I came across something he said on social media that – he was predicting, and I know this was a question we had, I think, last week. He was predicting more of these high-profile quarterbacks to go to places where they know that they can play and their system fits. I don't know if we have an example of that yet. I mean, maybe Matt Zoller's at Missouri, but Antoine Hill to Memphis would certainly fit the case where he's a guy that's going somewhere with the thought being, okay, I compete for a starting job year one. Whereas at Florida, I mean, he brought up DJ Lagway. He's well aware of how DJ Lagway looked in the orange and blue game, and he understands that he was the number one quarterback in the 2025 cycle. So I don't know what I would do if I was in Hill's camp. But I do think, you know, there's going to be some people that are ending up at schools that we didn't think were destinations in the past.
I think it's case by case, but I think in Hill's unique situation, I think playing time and access to playing time is really important. It's vital for him. And whether that's early, I feel like Memphis is a healthy situation that he can grow with that is not going to have all of these expectations attached to him, as opposed to Florida's going to continue to bring in competition. That's just the way it's going to go. What does it look like in 2026? What's going to prevent them from bringing in one of the best arms in the country? There's nothing guaranteed at both spots, but I think access to the field at Memphis is more clear, where they'll actually try to build around Antoine Hill, where in Florida, he's going to have to earn the right to play there. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with him. I think his recruitment, ironically, could be a catalyst for what we see for years to come with guys that kind of fit his profile, and you can kind of put him in the bucket of developmental upside. But if they're self-aware enough, you got some opportunity to make some coin and have access to the field early. It makes sense. And like you said, what's preventing him from 2 to 3 years re-entering the market, getting a pay raise, and going to play at a higher level now that he has that experience? Guys, I mentioned every Tuesday and Wednesday, you can find us noon Eastern time on the 24/7 Sports YouTube channel. You can also find us on X, but on Thursday, you can also access the 24/7 Sports YouTube channel for 24/7 Live. That's where you can find that 5 o'clock Eastern time. Emily Proud, Smoke Dixon, Carl Reed, the usual guys and gals on that show. Make sure to stop by and give those guys a little bit of your time. They do a fantastic job there. Drew, one of our last segments of today is what you brought up, and there's been a little bit of a change in the recruiting evaluation period, and that change is coaches are now only allowed to visit a school once during the spring eval. That used to be twice, so they go from 2 to 1, and that seems like an incremental change, but a lot of what you have to remember, a lot of what spring recruiting is, it's a lot of PR. Right, you got to go see a lot of people. You got to go shake a lot of hands, and you have to keep a lot of people happy. That's really what it comes down to. That is what we like to call area recruiting. So when you cut that in half, now it becomes important to see the priorities, right, when you're on the road. And that's basically how we have now shifted from area recruiting to position recruiting. Drew, your thoughts on this, because, you know, it might seem like something that is minute, but strategically in personnel departments across the country, this is something that I think can have a ripple effect and cause a, I don't want to say a stir, but a big change philosophically for how these programs kind of approach spring recruiting.
Well, I want to ask how you would set up your recruiting department if you were at Washington or Oregon. I've heard some gripes from some college coaches out on the road. I mean, it used to be they would come down to South Florida and you would spend 20 days here. You know, maybe you go home on the weekend or the family comes down on the weekend to see you, but you're out on the road. You know, you're hitting 6-7 high schools a day. You're shaking the hands, right? You're handing out the offers and you're building those relationships. But now, a lot of staffs, you know, it's positional recruiting. You are going to go see the top 10, 15 players at your respective position on your board, and then you're going to go home and you're done, right? And to me, this just feels like we're getting more and more shifting towards that NFL model, where there is no, like you said, you know, relationship. I got to stop to see my guy. I mean, because you can only go to a school once. And think about it. Some of these powerhouse programs, right, at St. Thomas Aquinas, you could be recruiting a kid or four different kids that play four different positions. Who do you send there? It just feels like things have changed a little bit. I don't know if it's for the better. I don't know if it's for the worse. But no one's talking about this, and it certainly has changed the dynamic a little bit in terms of how recruiting is getting done right now, this month, in advance of the June official visits, right? May 31st, first weekend, these officials are going to take place. And it's a lot of guys that are, hey, you only get one stop. Can't go to practice and then kind of double back for that spring jamboree later in the month. You only get one chance.
I think it makes teams more short-sighted, right? It makes them focus on what the in-class is. So the in-class right now would be 2025, right? So you don't want to leave yourself vulnerable to exposure. Let's say we have the top player on our board and we're not going to see him because, well, we already have him scheduled for an official visit and we feel pretty buttoned up. Well, what happens is if we're competing against Alabama and Georgia, that's all ammunition for them to take a shot. Well, we saw you, right? We came during the spring. And as silly as that sounds, we live in a what have you done for me lately? What's most important? So any type of wiggle room that you give the opponent, they will take advantage of, right? That stuff is really important. So it's not going to be so much of, hey, I got to do a little politicking because I know this program, although they don't have anybody in the 25 class, there's an in-state 26, 27 target that we like and we need to go see him. That's going to be really important. I think the other thing is, like, it's only going to emphasize, like, you know, like these director of high school relations positions. You don't really see them anymore, but like the high school coaching clinics in the off season, like that stuff's important now, right? Because the importance of these head coaches and these liaisons between the high school and the colleges, they're still very important. But now these are the people that are being left out of the equation that you still have to find some way to appease and pay them attention. But now that you cut them out, you know, it's going to be difficult. So I kind of feel for the people in charge of these personnel and recruiting departments in terms of strategy. It used to be easy, like you said, to double back and make sure we're shaking hands and we're buttoned up. And now it's like, all right, it's going to be very difficult to kind of keep a pulse, keep a temperature on what's going on if you don't know, right? In area recruiting, you know, we talk about this all the time, the NFL draft in Washington, they had 10 players drafted. So much of that success is people naturally want to get away from area recruiting. Coaches do, because it's not convenient. You want to go see your top targets. So much of why we were so good at Washington was because of the investment in area recruiting. And we feel like that information really at the end of the day, because of the relationships that they invested in, was a big part of the reason that we were hitting at a higher clip on the person, right? So we bring that up a lot, the combination of the person and the athlete. Well, we had a lot of good information and we had a lot of good coaches that did their homework and they had the right connections and they built that trust and that foundation over time. That's what's being cut out right now, essentially. In my opinion.
Do you have any good people stories, person background on any of those Washington kids that were drafted?
I'm trying to think, you know, Scott Huff, he's now the offensive line coach with the Seattle Seahawks, maybe the best area recruiter I've ever worked with. You know, just his ability to relate to people of all kinds. It doesn't matter if it was a prospect, a prospect's parents, a guardian, a high school coach. You felt like when he presented a player, you knew everything that you needed to know, A to Z. And that's because his relationships, when he went into a building, were second to none. He talked to the custodians. He talked to the principal. He talked to the assistant coaches. He would talk to anybody that had a contact point with the prospect. And, you know, when it comes down to betting on size and betting on traits and his position in offensive line, yeah, everybody wants size. Everybody wants redeeming qualities. Typically, people get it. But the ones that work out not only have those redeeming qualities, but have the redeeming intangibles as well. That was the big force multiplier for us. And he knew those kids inside and out. And I always thought that was a huge added bonus for us.
Well, I'll add here, I think two of the best area recruiters I interacted with or came across, Ephraim Banda, Charlie Partridge, both of them have some big wins on their resume. They're no longer coaching college football. They're both in the NFL as position coaches. And I think a big driving factor is they saw the writing on the wall, right? This isn't really recruiting right now. What is going on? It's more, more transactional in terms of what those guys are doing.
I wouldn't call that a coincidence either. You know, like the guys that actually enjoy going out on the road and building and maintaining relationships are just, you know, and, you know, conversations that I've had with guys that have gone from college to the NFL, they're in their mind, they're just exhausted and they're just tired and they're just done. And it feels artificial and it doesn't feel real to them, maybe the way that it did 4 or 5 years ago. And that's not a world that they want to live in. So not to say that going from 2 to 1 spring evaluation days is you know, making people feel this way, but it is definitely something that I think is notable.
They're not getting the hotel Marriott points, the rental car points. You know, those are getting depleted. You're only out 15 days now, not 30.
You can't have it both ways, right? Because the other part of this is we've been trying to figure out a way to kind of reduce it, right? Just in terms of the stress level and the equity and the time invested on the road. So, you know, overall, I think that's what's really trying to happen here. But you the other shoe has to drop at some point.
Last thing I'll add on this, I think summer camps increasingly more important.
I'll tell you this: they've been so important since I've ever been in it.
But for the 26s and the 27s, you're not going to see. You got to get those guys on campus.
But not many people do summer camps right. People will go to or programs will set up summer camps throughout the country, and they will not recruit their board to these camps. They won't do it. The important part of early identification, early evaluation, is these summer camps and these live exposures. Remember the camps that you and I go to. And this is really for people listening right now. The camps that we go to, these combine circuits, coaches and personnel executives throughout the country, that is such an important exposure point to them. They don't have access to that. They have access to the film via UC report. But as you and I know, to be able to get that live exposure to see how these guys not only move and how they look physically and their body types, but how they interact, the nugget that you were given about Longstreet, right? That stuff is so important. The only time they're able to get that in a competitive environment are these summer camps. How much do we talk about DeMonte Smith showing up to Miami, right? Or these SNL camps that they used to have at Oregon back in the day, and you heard all these stories. Those are so important, and so much of Nick Saban's success at Alabama were these summer camps. And there's a great story about Amari Cooper showing up and turning in one of the best live in-person evaluations that I think Nick Saban had ever seen. So imagine doing all the homework, feeling like you have all the answers, but you just got to go back and you got to check it twice. And the final thing you need to see, it's just an in-person evaluation. That's why recruiting these guys to camp is so important. And I will say this, 90% of programs in the country, and that's probably being super conservative, take that for granted. I don't know how many of these programs do it right, but the ones that do it right have a massive advantage when it comes to roster building. So I agree with you 110%. Summer camps are not emphasized nearly enough. Drew, last thing here, by Joe, before the show, former top 247 pass rusher 2024 class. top 60, number seven edge.
23 class.
23, I'm sorry. I keep getting mixed up. All-American Bowl, measured in, I think, 35-inch arms, from Senegal originally. Pretty interesting background. Played his ball in Oklahoma. Showed up in San Antonio, and I think we were just kind of like floored by this kid's energy. Also, the physical traits we liked a lot as well. He played 11 snaps last year in a just, let's throwaway year for Michigan State, right? Hard to take anything away from that. He's going to Kansas, and man, I really like this fit. My buddy hit me up, said, you guys don't talk about Kansas enough. We're talking about him now. You got DeShawn Warner, Tekias Brinkley as well. Kansas just had the Booker kid drafted, right, I think in the fifth round, that our friend Lance Zierlein loves. I mean, dude, like, we haven't heard a lot from Kansas, but Kansas is one of those teams where it's just like, oh, yeah, this one's super, super savvy here. I love this pickup. And guess what? Kudos to By Job, in my opinion, for picking the right spot.
Yeah, I mean, how many teams – okay, let me – because all these teams had the opportunity to construct this edge rusher room. But this on paper, I would take this over how many other schools? You said it, By Job, DeShawn Warner, who was the number seven edge rusher for us last year, All-American Bowl selection, Tekias Brinkley, measurables, finishes a four-star for us. Like, Big 12, is that the best group of edge rushers potentially on paper, right? Given how much eligibility they have, the upside they have. Now the floors could be pretty low on some of these guys, but man, like, this is roster management, you know, sicko stuff, what Kansas has constructed here.
I mean, pretty fun, right? I mean, when's the last time we talked about Kansas in that light where you get excited about their edge rusher group, right? And if there's a team that I'm betting on, like, I don't know, smart money, Big 12 without Texas and Oklahoma, I mean, dude, it is there for the taking right now. And I'm sure there's a lot of people looking at Prime and Colorado and Texas Tech and UCF. Joey McGuire at UCF and Kansas State. I like Kansas. I like what they're doing there. So I'm excited about them.
We always keep talking about, what's it, NCAA, EA Sports 25. I don't know what the name of it is. They change it. Why can't it just be NCAA 25? It's like EA Sports. Okay, yeah. We're going with that. I mean, I don't know about you. When I play defense, I'm always using the edge rusher, right? So I think Kansas would be a fun team because you got like these like three young guys with potential stars underneath them. Like, you're looking to build a dynasty. Kansas, boom, there you go.
Kansas State, both going to be teams to be able to, I would say, generate a little excitement when the video game comes out. All right, Drew, we only got two questions today. Kane's Cat's in here like he always is. Kane's Cat's, we appreciate you, man. He says, question to Andrew. I know the ranking process has changed. How are you currently evaluating 2028 players, and how can you guys avoid having players ranked highly then falling later in the cycle?
Well, I think he means the next initial class we'll have is we're going to do 2027. That'll be in August, right? So that's that initial 100. I think we really dialed it in the last time. You know, we did that 2026 top 100 update. I mean, what we're looking for is developmental traits, upside. I mean, there is no exact science to it. I've actually gone back and studied, you know, kind of some of these initial 100s we came out a long time ago. And it's like, okay, you know, who were the misses? Well, it was the guy that had limited growth potential. It was the guy that, you know, there was no verified information on. So we're looking for, I think the common misconception when you get to these early, early cycles is, you know, how did you not rank this freshman? Well, it's like, hey, we're not trying to identify the best high school football player in America. Like, that is not what we're trying to do. We're trying to find guys that are starting to figure it out and round the corner. Now, it might not happen as sophomores. It might not happen as juniors, but it could as seniors. So I think we've really kind of dialed in that process. I mean, go back to Jeremiah Smith's year. I mean, Jeremiah Smith was like number 35 overall for us in the top 100, and he ends up finishing number one overall. So, you know, also looking at the positions, offensive line. I mean, you could look at the the 2024 NFL draft. The top three offensive linemen weren't playing offensive linemen in high school, you know, when they were freshmen. So trying to stay light on the numbers there as well, because it's going to be hard for, you know, to hold someone up there because there's going to be guys that are emerging behind them. So, you know, it's not a fun exercise. I think Cooper Patagna, Hudson Standish, Gabe Brooks, I mean, we really put some effort into the 26 update, already working on the 2027 update. We got a little watch list going there, and then we'll have one for 2028 as well, obviously. But it is a year-round type of thing. I mean, Cooper can attest to this. It's like, all right, hey, saw this 2027 over the weekend, making notes, and it goes into our database for when it is time to construct that top 100.
Drew, at what point are you like 2029, 2030, 2034? You're like, I'm just too old for this. Can't do this anymore.
I don't know.
It's weird to me. My first class in, the first class I ever worked on was like 2017. But I think it was 2015 that was the first class that was signed. You know, I worked further ahead when I was at Alabama, but 2015 was the first class, and here we are 10 years later. You know,
2030 is going to feel weird, right? Because it's going to be the three.
I know. There's just times I wake up and I'm like, you know, somebody will, like, you get a DM, you get these DMs. It's like, hey, I got a son, he's a 2029, and you're like, you roll your eyes, and then you're like, yeah, it's not that far away. You know, it's really not that far away. So always interesting there.
One of my favorite things is, like, you know, you go to like these gatherings, a bunch of little kids going around. I'm like, what class are you? Like 2035? Like where are we at in the calendar? And they, you know, they're puzzled, but the parents will get it.
I mean, I guess they know, man. They're trained that way. All right, last one. Living free, rent free in UT. Good to see you, my friend. He says, what are y'all's thoughts on linebacker Riley Pettijohn out of Texas? Drew, I'll start here. Currently ranked number 57, number 7 linebacker. I'm a fan of this kid. 6'1.5", 216. Just in terms of what you see from the athlete, I think there's a little bit more to him than meets the eye. 10-foot plus broad. Also a guy that ran 11.22 in the 100 meters, 24.1 in the 200 meters, 5.8 in the high jump. So we always talk about evaluating the athlete first. I like him athletically. And then the other part of this is, on September 1st of his freshman year of college, he'll be 18 years old in 1 month. I mean, he's a puppy. You know, so just in terms of his physical development, there's a lot there left. I think he's going to be a weak side linebacker. He's got some situational pass rush ability. I like the key and diagnose. I think he's a good athlete, not an elite athlete. I think he's more of a high floor guy, going to take a year. But I really like this kid, like, as a solid program player, you know, that's going to be able to find a role. And, you know, I think best case scenario, maybe he's a day two prospect, but I think, you know, probably more seen overall when this is said and done, probably somewhere in between. Right. So I like this kid a lot. I think if there is one word I could use to describe him, it would be solid. Like, this is a guy that is plus value when you add him to your team. He's a winnable plus player in my mind with redeeming traits. So a lot to like.
I think you kind of hit it on the head there. Not much to add. I know Mike Roach, Papa Roach, who's been on the show, always bringing up some Riley Pettijohn. Always, always, always.
That's all I got, bud.
That's all I got as well, man.
Tapped out?
I'm tapped out. We unloaded the clip. Really nerded out. Talked Syracuse. We talked Kansas. We talked summer camps. We talked spring Memphis evaluation NIL. Period. Yeah, Memphis NIL.
We're in the weeds. All right, guys, we appreciate you joining us as always. Remember, tomorrow, same time, 24/7 Sports YouTube channel. You can also find us on X. Make sure to like and subscribe. We appreciate you guys stopping by. As always, for Andrew Ivins, I'm Cooper Patagna. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great rest of your day.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.